former NFLer, of course, played for the Jets and the Broncos and the Texans, now analyst in the United States. Nick Ferguson joins us. Nick, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Hey, guys, listen, don't forget now, I spent some time up north in the CSL with the Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. So I stress both sides of the fence now.
Okay, nice. Give me your thoughts. As a guy who's gone through the combine, do people overanalyze this too much? Like, does it matter if an O-lineman can run a 4.640?
No, you know what, guys, it really doesn't. The only thing you're concerned about when you're talking about, you know, as they call it, the big uglies, is how quick they are from that 10 to maybe 20 yards. Because just trying to fathom the thought of an offensive lineman, a guy that's 300 pounds, running 40 yards, the only time he ever run that far, if he's celebrating a touchdown, that's about it. They're just talking about explosive movements in a short space. That's it.
So why are they constantly doing it, and why is there so much focus on it? Do you think maybe they should look at changing and testing different things at the combine for players?
Well, I tell you what, when Paul Brown, who came up with 40 yards to test his players, I don't think he envisioned the way that we're seeing things unfold now in the NFL. And when you're a high school player, when you're a college player, and you get to that pro level, there's only two things that guys constantly ask you. You even get this question at the gym: what's your bench, and how fast was your 40? So with so much emphasis put on the 40 time, and you see that each year you see a guy that is flying under the radar, somehow he jumps off the screen after the combine because he ran a fast 40. But what we always have to remember, that 40 is straight line speed. We want to see if that guy has lateral quickness. Does he have a low knee bend? I mean, can he transition in and out of his breaks, whether it's an offensive lineman, a wide receiver, or a guy in the secondary? So you put a little stock in a 40, but to me, you don't want to put too much in it.
Nick, you've lined up with guys, I'm sure, in practice where you know their bench and, you know, been tangled with them. Can you really tell if a guy, if you could do five more reps than someone else, or he can do five more than you? Like, is that a big difference?
You know what, guys, once again, that is part of the show now, that's the NFL Combine, because usually they say the test of being able to bench press shows how strong you are and the ability to lock a guy out. I've seen some guys who've only, you know, bench pressed 225 maybe eight times, but they're a heck of a football player. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we can't measure, because all of this, the NFL Combine, all of it is measurements. Does a guy have the tangibles? Is he 6'1", 6'2", whatever the prototypical for the position? But there's one thing that the NFL Combine can't measure, and that's a guy's heart. You can say a guy's not tall enough, he's not fast enough, but I know when I put him in between those chalk lines, he shows up time and time again. And we've seen over the years guys who've had successful collegiate careers who jumped off the charts at the combine, and before you know it, they were gone. You didn't even hear about them like 3 years after, you know, their college eligibility is up. So we just have to keep things in perspective when we look at what the final results of the NFL Combine are.
Former NFL and CFLer Nick Ferguson joins us talking to the NFL Combine, Nick. So how much do you think, like, I know the analysts put a lot of stock into it. Do you find that coaches and scouts, are they going away from it? Do you think they're focusing on other things now? Or when you see the interview process, do you still think some of the teams themselves still put too much focus on a bench in the 40?
Well, there are those teams that do, and there are those teams that don't. I think more or less, you know a lot about a guy by doing one thing. You go talk to his coach, maybe his high school coach, to get kind of a background of the guy so you understand what he can do both on and off the field. But you always go back to the tape. See, the tape never lies. You find out more about that player by watching his tape. And for me, what I like to go back and watch, not the games he excelled well at, because that's expected. Let's go back to the games where he played against a team that had far more superior talent than the team that he was playing on, or the adversity. Was he able to overcome that adversity the first time he got punched in the mouth as an offensive tackle? Did he come back in the second half, settle down, work his fundamentals, and able to lock out that pass rusher? These are the things that I like to look at, and that I've had the opportunity to talk to some of the GMs, and that's what they're looking for. We want to know what this guy is truly made of. We know what his measurables are, but does he have longevity? That's what you need, longevity to survive in the league.
Nick Ferguson joining us. It's interesting on that. They'll go back and they'll watch the tapes. Have you talked to any of the GMs? Like, how come there isn't, and you talked about it earlier, like knee bend for guys, especially for defensive backs, right? The back pedal. How come they don't start making tests that are more suited to certain positions?
Well, you know what? When you look at the drills, that's what they try to do with the individual drills after they run a 40. Take them through the nuances of what the position is going to dictate to them to do once they get on the field. The twist, the turn, the quick feet and spaces. And you got to think about it this way. Majority of these tests are not just to, you know, show that player and the bright spot. It also it's put there to point out the weaknesses and flaws in the player's game. Because remember this, keep this in mind. It's all about, you know, finding ways not to pay a guy an enormous amount of money. Still get a quality player, but not pay him an enormous amount of money, because you can have a guy that is highly talented coming in. He doesn't test well. He doesn't do the drills well. Now he goes from the pre-draft status of being the number one. Now he falls to the team at the number three. So when you look at the money and what they got at the value of the pick, then that bodes well for the team. So there are certain drills catered to find out how well that player can actually play as an individual, but play in a team concept as well.
Nick, you mentioned a little bit earlier that some teams do focus on the combine while others will rely heavily on tape. Who would some of those teams be that we've seen over the course of time here that, you know, I guess make the splashy, sexy combine pick versus what we see on tape or over the course of a season?
Well, you know, from history has shown us, if you look at the Oakland Raiders, you know, may Al Davis rest in peace, but his whole thing was he wanted guys that could stretch the field vertically. And that's why he always went after those fast track type of guys. But that speed doesn't always translate on the football field, because you got to remember, those are straight line guys. So that worked if they were running a go pattern, what they call the streak or burner pattern straight up the field. But if he has to run any of the other routes on a route tree, he can't get in and out of his breaks. Now, when we look at what Pete Carroll has done with the Seattle Seahawks, to me, that's the blueprint. You look at what Bill Belichick has done with the Patriots, that's the blueprint. Getting marginal players and putting them together and creating a really stacked type of defense or offense that, you know, most teams in the NFL, they can't put those type teams together. So you don't have to go out and get a bunch of guys in the first round. You can get a bunch of fourth rounders, free agents, but you teach them and you coach them the fundamentals of the game and get them to play as a cohesive unit. That is the philosophy for building teams in the NFL.
Nick Ferguson joins, and Seattle obviously has done a fantastic job. They had a lot of guys, especially in their secondary, that were overlooked at times, and they use it as motivation, and clearly it helped them build a team that was fast and mentally tough. They had a lot of guys, Nick, who seemed to be on the same page as far as maybe feeling like, man, we've got something to prove and we're never satisfied. You can't ever gauge that, but is that infectious? Have you ever been in a room where maybe you weren't that guy, but you had a lot of guys who felt like, man, I've always got a chip on my shoulder, I got to prove something? And in football, it seems a lot of guys can succeed more by playing with that chip on their shoulder.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was one of those guys that played with a chip on my shoulder, whether it was I was going into my third year, the team didn't want to sign me back or whatever it was from a financial reason. The one thing is, if you play long enough in the NFL, you'll get a chance to play against those teams, those GMs, those managers, and those front office staff that might have overlooked you for whatever reason, and you get a chance to showcase your talent on the field and let them know, listen, you made a mistake. So you're going to see it again this year, and when you look at Seattle defense, those guys, those group of guys in that back end, they play with a heavy chip on their shoulder, and that's motivation. That's motivation. You don't need money and fame to motivate you. Just the fact that someone said that you cannot do something, that's motivation and not enough. And you're going to see a lot of players this year now coming to the draft, now wanting to prove themselves and give them that extra push.
Nick, out of Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, and Teddy Bridgewater, which one do you think will be the best NFL quarterback and why?
Well, you know what? That's kind of hard to gauge because we've seen a lot of quarterbacks do well on the collegiate level, get to the pro game and realize it is a faster-paced game. The schemes are a little more complex, but also we have to remember, too, it's the supporting cast. You know, Blake Bortles, we say if he goes to Cleveland, yeah, he has Josh Gordon, he has a decent defense, but if he has no other offensive weapons around him, how much will we actually hear about him? He would disappear and be therefore called a bust. So it all depends on the scheme, the coaching staff, and the team with the cast of characters they go to. But just kind of looking at what players would have been able to do in their collegiate career, Bortles is a great guy. I mean, he's tall, he has big hands, he's well coached. He actually was coached by one of my former college coach, George O'Leary, down at UCF. So he's proven that he can win the big game. So when you look at what the league is now and how they the comparison to other quarterbacks, I think he has the possibility of being the better of the three.
Nick Ferguson, a former NFLer, now an NFL analyst down in the United States, joins us. I want to talk about the position you know the best, of course, the secondary. When you look at this year's group of secondary guys, who do you see maybe, and we're seeing a lot bigger secondary guys, Nick, than we've seen, and Seattle's probably changing that. The receivers are bigger. We're seeing a lot more guys 6'2", 6'3", than we ever used to as far as DBs. Who do you like best out of the defensive back position this year?
Well, I tell you, this Justin Gilbert kid out of Oklahoma State, you know, I mean, he returns punts, and he ran a 4.37 at the combine, and that's what you need, a guy that has shows you a lot of versatility, because you want to make sure a guy can play great on the outside and match up with some of these big, tall wide receivers, and maybe in your nickel or sub package, possibly move them inside to cover some of those quick guys like a Wes Welker and a Percy Harvin. But more importantly, we've seen a lot of hybrid tight ends. These tight ends that are, you know, part wide receiver, part ex-basketball player. So you want to have a guy that allows you to do a lot with your scheme. And I think a guy like Justin Gilbert has a skill set to allow any team that he goes to be able to do multiple things, you know, with his ability to play. But I like the joining kid out of Florida State. You know, he's not really big as far as height is concerned, but he plays big all the time. He's really physical, gets down in the box. He mixes it up with a lot of guys, quick feet inside small space. But I like those are the two guys that I like the best in the combine so far.
Looking at the defensive backs versus receivers, and, you know, a lot of the times you can have big play receivers. Josh Gordon, it seems, you know, he came out kind of nowhere really to be a guy who was that dominant as a receiver. It seems to take longer for, not longer per se, but a lot of guys that third year in the NFL. Why is that? What is the biggest challenge for most receivers coming to the NFL that it takes them a few years to get success?
Well, because some of the guys have played in that wide-open spread offense, and when you come to the NFL, it's a little different. The defense is trying to match what you're trying to do offensively, and then you have, once again, guys with a better skill set. Now, whereas you face guys who are better, you know, who play a lot of zone coverage, and you're able to run and find open space, in the NFL, it's a lot of match coverage, combo coverages, and a lot of man coverage. That's one thing some young receivers struggle with, how to get off the press. And it's a gradient, it's a learning curve that it takes some time for them to understand what the scheme is and what it means to be a professional. And that means going to work every day, being very attentive in those meetings, watching the scouting report, watching yourself, scouting yourself on tape, but knowing what the defensive coordinator wants to do and try to stop you. Some guys have a difficult time making that adjustment. That's why, you know, that's why I say don't get enamored with all the measurables and the tangibles and the speed, because they still have to be able to transition and take that, put it on the field and make it a quality product. And sometimes some guys can't make that transition.
There is so many Division I schools, over 120 of them. There's tons of NFL, college football players, Nick, a lot of them very good. And they don't make that jump. You know, there's a lot of guys who don't get drafted who are free agent signings. They turn out to be very good. You've seen a lot of things happen over your time in your career, both north and south of the border. I don't know if you can pinpoint what thing, but in the NFL, what do you think is the major reason why a lot of the successful college players can never translate that success to the NFL?
Well, I think because they, at that particular point in their conference or their team, they were the best player. you know, and everything seems to have come really easy. Once you get to that professional level where everyone's good, everyone, the mentality has changed. It's gone for, hey, listen, I'm playing well for my coaches because I have a scholarship, to guys now playing because they have to see their family. It's a way of life for them. So now you're dealing with grown men that have that mentality, like, I have to eat every day. Every day I don't go out and make a play, that's a possibility where I may be released from the team. And some guys, it takes them longer to kind of grasp that mentality of what they're really dealing with. So it's like you're taking a lamb and you're putting them out there with other lions, and those lions are hungry. I can tell you, anyone in any occupation, if you're trying to feed your family, you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that happens. And in the NFL, you're dealing with the cream of the crop. So there's no time to waste. Guys have to know what they're doing once they hit the field. Like I said, once again, some guys, that light doesn't go on right away for them. It takes them maybe to be released for a team or a coach to sit them down for the light to go on.
Nick, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for sharing us some insight on the combine.
Anytime, guys. Anytime.